Stand by. Transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to the show. It's been a busy week in entertainment, so we're talking to Denise Warner of PopEater.com about the aftermath of the Grammy Awards. We'll also touch on the controversy surrounding Lady Gaga and her new hit song, Born This Way. Up next is certified career coach Hallie Crawford telling us how to handle a bad boss so it doesn't affect your career. And then we're going to give you some hot advice on spring 2011 fashion with Parmal Gahunia, our fashion consultant. We've also got a kick-butt remix of Bruno Mars' hit track, Grenade. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
When it comes to the world of entertainment, it's always wonderful to talk to our entertainment correspondent straight from New York City, Denise Warner of PopEater.com. Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Denise, we are now post-Grammy Awards, so I have to ask you, were there any surprises in terms of, you know, who won the awards?
I mean, I think the biggest surprise of the night was definitely Arcade Fire's album of the year win. A lot of people on the internet were like, who are Arcade Fire? Personally, I love their album. I loved The Suburbs and I loved, you know, everything they do. So I wasn't surprised, but I think in general, that's what really had people wondering what was up.
And I know that obviously you're based in the States, and obviously for people up here in Canada, in Montreal particularly, where I am right now, they're from here. So mm-hmm. we are ecstatic and over the moon about that. But I also know, from what I understand, they have a huge European following because they really have earned their stripes to get where they are.
Right. I think us Americans get a little arrogant and think that the rest of the world, you know, doesn't matter sometimes as far as music goes, because, you know, there are a ton of artists who are huge in Europe and Canada and people are like, who are they here? But no, I mean, I love Arcade Fire, so I was happy for their win.
And was there a big disappointment that Eminem didn't get it?
You know, not really. I mean, he's gotten so many, and I think I was more surprised that he only took home two and he had the most nominations with 10.
Oh, it was only two, eh? I wasn't sure what the count was, so he only got two. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So a bit disappointing, maybe for him, but I think overall we're all proud of him anyway, and he did a great performance. Now, I know a lot of people, I think, who are not in the entertainment business were shocked that Bieber didn't walk away with Best New Artist, But I don't think, and you can tell me if you agree, that he really didn't stand a chance to pick up that Best New Artist at the Grammys because they're not voted on by fans.
Oh, of course not. I mean, Justin Bieber's entertaining. He's got the 12-year-old audience on lockdown. But as far as the music industry, I mean, they like him. They appreciate him. But, you know, he's not the Best New Artist. And that, of course, was Esperanza Spalding.
Which I have to ask you, for a lot of us, who the heck is Esperanza Spalding, even though we got a taste of her on Grammy night?
Well, she's a 26-year-old jazz bassist. She's extremely talented. She's been around since 2005, you know, on the peripheral scene. And, you know, now she's finally kind of coming into her own. So I definitely recommend, you know, checking her out.
And a question for you. They cut away from Bieber fairly quickly when he didn't win. Do we know what happened when they cut away? Because he looked like he was really hoping for it.
He actually has admitted, and I'm surprised, several times that he was really disappointed. He thought he was going to win. And I guess when you have that kind of fan collective behind you, you just assume that it matters. He told Conan that he was really disappointed. He's, you know, said other times that he was too. But he definitely was happy for her and congratulated her and was not a sore loser in that respect.
Okay, that's good. But, you know, it's funny. I think, and I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, because first of all, he's 16, almost 17. And like you just mentioned, he has this massive fan base behind him, you know, who keeps telling him he's wonderful. And then even fellow celebrities don't help him because, you know, I saw him on Ellen recently and she was like, I love you. You're so talented. Like if you have even fellow celebrities telling you how awesome you are. And I know you and I agree he is talented, but he's 16. I don't think he's earned his stripes by any stretch of the imagination yet. And I think he did have that 16-year-old mentality. Like I should win this.
Of course. I mean, when you're a teenager, you just think everything belongs to you.
Exactly.
And especially if you're Justin Bieber. I mean, he had a number two movie in the States and at the box office over the weekend. So he was just probably really jazzed about that. And it was a really close race too, with between Never Say Never and Just Go With It. So of course he's trying to be on top of the world. And yeah, I guess he was just surprised that he didn't win.
Okay. Well, I think, and again, I'm not a hater. I think he is talented. I appreciate that he can actually play, musical instruments and so on. But I think he needed this dose of reality because, and I only think that's going to help him.
Oh, of course. I mean, now he's just going to work harder. And to be honest, I mean, I'm happy for Esperanza Spalding, but really the Grammy Best New Artist winner, they don't have the best track record. I don't know off the top of my head, but I just remember there's definitely been some winners and you've been like, who are they now?
Right.
So, and Justin Bieber seems to have a bit of longevity in him. So, he can take this with a grain of salt and move forward.
That's fantastic. Now, we have to touch on the firestorm that is Lady Gaga. First of all, let's talk about her arrival to the Grammys, because I don't think a lot of people and in certain parts of the world saw that, if we were sort of not in the States and get that television programming. But why did she not walk the red carpet and instead came in on the shoulders of her dancers enshrouded in an egg-like replica?
I think she did that because she's Lady Gaga. She just has to keep upping the ante every time because people expect it. If she doesn't walk the red carpet in some meat dress or with a live animal hanging off of her, she's got to go big or go home, I think.
Okay. And then with regards to the performance itself, because I think many people all over the world did see the performance, I personally thought she did a great job because, she did come out in the egg and then was born. But it was a solid performance, I thought. What's your thoughts in the entertainment circles down in the States?
As far as it's funny because the arrival had everyone so excited, and I think her performance, while great, was a little tame for her.
Right.
And so that's what had people surprised. They were expecting some big, weird thing, blood gushing, typical Lady Gaga, especially when you start off in such an interesting fashion. But then, she just kind of sings her song and does it well and dances, and you're kind of left wondering, that's it from her?
Do you think that she did that on purpose? Because I think she did. I think she decided, like, I'm coming in crazy town, and then I'm just going to perform my song solid.
No, I think you may be right because at the end of the day, she can't bring the weird factor every time. She has to let her talent stand on its own, and she was doing that here.
Now, I have to ask you again, with you being in New York City, which is the home base for Lady Gaga and her predecessor, if we want to call it like that, Madonna, are people loving Born This Way, or are they complaining that it sounds too much like Express Yourself?
Everyone kind of sees this or hears the similarities, and it's not, I mean, if you've listened to it, people have mashed it up already. It's pretty clear. I know that her brother, I know that Madonna's brother, Christopher Ciccone, who is not particularly close to the singer, said that this is, crap. This sounds exactly like it. Nothing official from Madonna's camp, because of course, you're not going to come out and say it, I don't think. But it definitely, definitely reminds everyone of Express Yourself.
But you know, it's funny. I went on air on my radio station here, or where I work here, up in Canada, and I was a bit frustrated because, like, I sort of waited the 24 hours after the song was released to sort of see what the buzz was. It's just like it drives me nuts because how many artists are out there now, for example, that sound like Michael Jackson, and some of their tunes are so similar to stuff that he's produced, but we don't say anything. So I can't understand what the problem is in the fact that, yeah, it's similar, but so what? How many people have replicated Elvis? So in my regard, it's like, leave her alone. She has already shown that she's her own person because she's definitely not a mini Madonna.
Right.
So I just find it very frustrating that they're picking on her for a song structure that, yeah, is similar, but so what?
So is everything else. I mean, I think you can, there are like millions of songs that just all sound the same.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've ever seen that video of the guy making fun of Paco Bell's Canon and how you can play Paco Bell's Canon into every single song. So, you're even going back into classical music. So, I mean, it's not a big deal. You're right. It sounds like it. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a big hit, and she's extremely talented, so let her be.
Joining us on the line from New York City is PopEater.com editor and Kelly Alexander Show entertainment correspondent, Denise Warner. Denise, I have to just touch on this with regards to the Grammys. Did anyone care about Mick Jagger's performance?
You know what? I think people cared more about his teal quilted blazer than his performance. It was fine. It was solid. It's Mick Jagger. But yeah, I mean, it's not really getting much buzz.
Okay. I didn't think so because it was just sort of, it just seems sort of way out in left field. And I know on the television programming, you know, up here in Canada, it was made to be such a big deal. And he came out and I was like, that's it. So anyway, I need to touch as well upon the Oscars because they're coming up very soon. Just with regards to what's, you know, going on down in the States, anything that we should be looking out for?
I mean, of course, the big race is between The King's Speech and Social Network. A lot of people thought that The Social Network had it in the bag, but recently The King's Speech has really been picking up steam. So we may see that British film take home the big award that night.
And do you think there's going to be any shocking either upsets in the grand scheme of thing or with regards to people's wardrobe, do you think we're going to see anything crazy?
Well, I really hope that Natalie Portman brings it on the red carpet because she's, you know, petite and pregnant and you can really do something awesome with that. And she's kind of been disappointing me lately, I've got to say.
With that bow with from...
Yeah, exactly. She wears the same silhouette every time. It's like, switch it up. You know, you have all these designers probably begging to dress you. You have all the options at your feet. But it was, with regards to surprise upsets, I mean, I really think that I think most of the acting awards are in the bag. I think Colin Firth is going to win Best Actor and Natalie Portman will take home Best Actress and Christian Bale for Best Supporting Actor. But I think everyone believes that Melissa Leo is going to win for The Fighter for Best Supporting Actress, but I actually think I have to say that Hailee Steinfeld really has a shot for True Grit.
Wow, that's amazing. And before I let you go, final thoughts on who's hosting the Oscars. Do you think it's going to go out well?
You know what? I'm glad that they took a risk with James Franco and Anne Hathaway. I mean, they're young, they're talented, obviously, both Oscar nominees themselves, and a couple years ago, James Franco this year. So it's really going to be interesting. And James Franco is kind of a jack of all trades, and we've seen Anne sing at the Oscars before. So, and I really think that they will accomplish their goal of getting a younger audience to watch.
Denise, thank you so much. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's Denise Warner from PopEater.com, our very own entertainment correspondent as well from New York City. And again, make sure to check her out at PopEater.com as well as her Twitter handle, DeniseMarie13.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Being at work can be challenging on its own with meeting deadlines and reaching objectives. The last thing you need adding to this mix is difficulties dealing with your manager or supervisor. To help us understand how to navigate these sometimes tricky waters is certified career coach Hallie Crawford, based in Atlanta, Georgia. Hallie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Hallie, it seems that a lot of people have to deal with bosses who are, in fact, very poor managers, whether that means that, you know, they make bad decisions or, plain and simply, they have no leadership or people skills. What, in your view, is the most important survival tool for someone dealing with a boss who is not a very good leader?
I think, Kelly, that this is very accurate. There are a lot of people out there who just are not born managers. They just happen to, you know, move up in the career scale and end up there kind of by chance. One of the most critical things that I think people need to do is to learn to manage up. In order to deal with a difficult boss who is not a great leader or manager, you need to learn to be an even better communicator. Ask them for their priorities and expectations. Make sure that the lines of communication between you and your boss are very clear. And if they're not being clear with you, ask them for clarity. So it's this concept of managing up, like you kind of learn how to manage your boss and manage your manager in a way.
And when you ask for these, you know, expectations, if they're not verbally communicating it, do you ask for it in writing?
Yes, I think that's a great way to do it. So part of managing up is understanding and learning what your boss's style is and what works best for them as well as you. So if email is going to be better, then don't ask them in person. Ask them via email. Figure it out and you guys work it out. But a lot of times bosses are so busy, they're too busy with their jobs to be good managers. So you need to learn to be proactive and find out, okay, how can I better work for them so that your job is better in the end?
And what are your thoughts, Hallie, on this? Because it just sort of popped into my mind as you were talking. You know, I think a lot of, you know, young adults coming out of school, maybe they haven't really, you know, had their head in the business world for very long. It's a daunting thing, I think, when they first get that bad manager, you know.
Yep.
What do you suggest in the fact that, do you just sort of tell these young people that, you know what, it's not that you want to say this is the way the world is, but that they can expect that this is probably going to happen again, and to accept that they're probably, like you said, are going to have to manage up.
Yeah. And I do. I mean, it's tough because you don't want to be depressing or, you know, say, yeah, this is how life is. Just get used to it. But it's true. It's not going to be a cakewalk. And so it's part of kind of breaking yourself into the work world and understanding that there's always going to be challenges. There's going to be good things, too. But that you need to just do this as part of learning to be a professional, that it's not like school or high school or college anymore. Learning to be a professional means learning how to work with other people. And sometimes that means working with difficult people that you don't always get along with. That's just part of it.
And I'm assuming, Hallie, that there's a big difference between a boss who is a poor leader and a boss who you can't trust. And what do you do in that situation where you know that this manager is very dangerous to you and your career advancement?
Well, I think a key word that you said here is dangerous. And there's a big difference between someone who's just not a good manager versus someone you can't trust at all. I mean, someone you can't trust is dangerous to your career advancement. And in this case, if that person is that dangerous, you're probably not going to be able to have a very productive conversation with them directly. It depends on your situation, and you could try it. But if it's that bad, you probably need to either talk to human resources at your company, talk to the person above them, or make a decision. Is it worth it for me to stay here? Do I really want to stay at this company? Or is it better for me just to leave? Because if they're that dangerous, so to speak, and you really can't trust them, then there's probably not a lot you can do about it. Unless you're getting vibes from upper management that they're catching on to this, you know, there's not a ton that you can do about it. You can try to talk to someone if you want to stay there and keep your job, but then be prepared for if you do that things could be tense between you and your boss.
How do you know when to go to HR? Because I feel like it almost has to be a gut reaction. Like my dad always told me, trust your gut. But like you said, it's a tricky situation. So it almost feels like that in and of itself is such a stressful situation on yourself to know, do I go, do I not, do I suck it up, do I leave? Like, is there concrete steps that a person can sort of run through in their heads to say, yeah, I need to go to HR, or, you know, no, I can't go just yet?
I think so, kind of. I mean, I would say kind of. I know that's kind of frustrating, but because this is very situational. I mean, a lot of it depends on your situation, the boss's personality, your personality, and what is actually happening that's causing you to not trust them. But certain steps to think about are, you know, is it about you or is it about them? Like, are other people experiencing the same kind of things at your company? Do you see that your boss doing the same kind of things to other people? So trying to get clear on, is it more about you or is it more about them, and there's just a problem company-wide with them? And if that's the case, if it's more about them, then going to HR or something like that is a little bit more reasonable. But because you don't want to go to HR if there is something that you might be doing that's wrong or not the way that you should be doing it, and you're sending the wrong message. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And you just mentioned, you know, if it's you, or if it's, you know, it's also affecting several of your colleagues. So, Hallie, do you ever suggest going to HR as a group?
I think that's a great idea. Yeah, I actually would do that. And you always want to be careful here, because again, whenever you take that kind of step going to HR, it can be seen as dramatic. And if the boss gets wind of it, that can make things tense. But going with other people, you want to make sure that when you go to HR, you have specific like facts in order and a paper trail, and make sure that you've got your story straight so that you're not going in there making accusations that are inaccurate or whatever. But prepare in advance. If you do go as a group, prepare what you want to say and how you want to approach it.
And I'm glad you brought up the paper trail, because that was another question I had for you. If things are getting contentious with a manager, how do you, and maybe, you know, mostly it's been verbal to this point, how do you to take that step so that you do have documented proof?
I would definitely start, you know, just a basic Word document or something on your home computer. I think it's better to do that just in case.
Okay.
But, you know, when you come home from the end of the day, even actually during the day, if you need to make handwritten notes about what has gone on, including dates, times of conversations, I mean, the more detailed you get, the better. Because it's the kind of thing that if you had to take it to court, I mean, worst case scenario, but, you know, imagine that that's what you want to be doing. You want to document everything, handwrite it at the office if you need to, but then go ahead and type it out at home and save emails, copy and paste emails, that kind of thing. I have a client now who's had trouble with her boss, and she's actually suing her company. And she CCs, she has started to CC HR on all of her communications with her boss. Now, it's made things really tense, and she knew that going into it. But for her and her situation, what was happening was bad enough that she felt it was worth going to bat for.
Okay. And if you are being, you know, bullied by a boss, do you confront them, you know, ever? Or is that making things worse? Because I feel, Hallie, like it's such a fine line between, you know, standing up for yourself or coming off as confrontational.
I know. And especially, you know, as women too, women tend to have, you know, get a stigma for doing this. And there's trouble with that too. So my first preference, if it's possible in your situation and depending on the boss's personality, my first preference would be to talk to them first. But if the boss is a bully and it's gotten so bad that that person may not listen to what you have to say, and it could just make things worse. But the bottom line is, I don't believe in just rolling over and letting it happen. You either need to do something about it by talking to your boss or talking to HR, or, you know, if you don't feel like it's worth going to bat for, like my client that I mentioned, then it's probably not a good fit for you, and you need to move departments or just move to a completely different company.
Joining us on the show is certified career coach Hallie Crawford. Make sure you check her out, www.halliecrawford.com. Now, Hallie, I know we talked just moments ago about going to HR. Before you go to that step, though, you know, because everybody has a manager. So if your manager is a problem, again, I know this is a sticky sort of situation, but do you go above them to their specific manager or do you go to HR first? Because, again, I just, you know, you see how this could become worse, but it's like I've had friends in these situations where they're like, you know, I didn't know if I should just go above them or do I start that HR ball rolling because, you know, once I'm on it, it doesn't stop.
Right. I think this depends on the situation and it depends on your boss's boss, their manager, your relationship with them, and this is critical actually. So with a lot of these questions that you're asking me and this, you know, how to know what to do, a lot of this depends on your relationship with the different players in this kind of game here, if you will. And it also depends on HR, because I've had a lot of clients who say, well, you know what, HR is out for the company. They're not actually out for the employee. So if you feel like HR is a safe place, so to speak, to go talk to, you know, about this, and that they truly are advocates for employees, I would go ahead and I might do that first in order to, you know, avoid going above your boss's head, because what if the manager comes and says something to them? So to approach HR, because you don't know what they're going to say. They might have already had complaints about your boss that you just don't know about. They might have a way to approach it, you know, together with you, with the boss's boss or something like that. So again, I think it depends on the HR department and your sense of them. But I think going to them is one of the best first steps.
And Hallie, actually, what do you think about HR in general? Because it's funny, as you were speaking and you mentioned that certain HR departments are seemingly out for the company, you know, because I've heard that before. What's, you know, in this day and age, in 2011, you know, because I know that you deal with this stuff all the time, what's your sense of HR departments, you know, globally? Do you actually think that things are changing? Because I think even 10 years ago, they would have been more out for the company than they maybe are today.
Yeah, I think that it actually is getting a little bit better. I think it depends on the company and sometimes the industry. I mean, if you think about very competitive industries where, like, for example, the client I was referencing before, she's in the pharmaceutical industry, and that's just something like it's a lot of money involved and it's sales. I mean, there's just a lot on the line. And so HR for a pharmaceutical company, it could be very different from, say, at a university where it's more collegial, you know, that kind of thing. But I do think that with the tough economy and things changing, that people are going to be, employees are going to be, end up being a little bit more mobile than they were before, especially with the healthcare bill, if it stays the way it is in the United States specifically, that people are going to be more mobile. It's a more global economy. People are going to be moving around more. And so HR does need to look out for and be more concerned with employees so that they stay put, so that turnover doesn't increase.
When do you say when, you know, Hallie, and leave your position? Because, you know, I don't think you have to point the stick very far to find a number of us who either know someone or have been in the position where they're getting, to a degree, maybe even physically sick, you know, from something that's been going on with headaches and whatnot. And then the mental anguish of having a manager that is either bullying them or causing them problems. You know, if you really love your job, but you hate your boss, it seems like such a tough situation to be in to make that call.
Yeah, it is very tough. I had a client in Chicago who, that was the situation. She loved her work. She was a consultant, loved it. But her boss was difficult and difficult with everyone on her team. It came down to she was going to move. And I think especially if you're getting physically sick like that actually happened to me years ago. You need to do something. You cannot stay in that situation, whether it's moving to a different department in your company, asking to be transferred, or just moving to a completely different organization. You can't stay in that kind of situation for very long because it's not good for your health at the end of the day.
Do you start to lose perspective too, Hallie? Because I think, you know, like you mentioned, you yourself had become sort of sick. I think almost when you're in that position, it's like this cycle that you can't break out. It's almost like an abusive relationship. I don't like to sort of put that out there lightly, but it just seems like if you're in this mental anguish and there's this pattern that's been set up with the way your boss is treating you and the way you're handling it, and maybe even if you're trying to make it better, it's this cyclical thing that you can't get out of. It must be just so difficult to almost pull yourself out of it.
Yeah, it is. It's like the old slipper that doesn't fit anymore, but it's somehow oddly comfortable because you're used to it. And you can. People get sucked into that, and it's really difficult because even though they know better, they know that this is toxic for them and not good, at least they're used to it. And sometimes they're afraid to make a move to something else just because this is comfortable, even though it's not good for them. So that's why it does help to have a coach or just somebody, a mentor, family, friend, you know, whatever, to talk through these kinds of situations, because a lot of times we do need an objective outside perspective because we're so mired in it, we can't see objectively anymore.
This next question that I have for you, I don't sort of put it out there lightly, even though, you know, it might come off like that. But, you know, if you have decided that you need to leave your job because it's become unbearable, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, do you go out in a blaze of glory and sort of confront your soon-to-be ex-boss? Because I wonder if for yourself, like if you've been beat down, you know, again, mentally or whatever, is it good for your self-esteem to sort of stand up and I don't mean cause a big ruckus in the office, but
right.
But just to sort of leave, you know, you've made the decision that you need to leave because you know it's not going to get better. But now, because you are leaving, do you finally need to put your foot down a bit and not, you know, again, cause a ruckus, but just sort of be like, this is why I'm leaving. This is where we're at. You know, you've been an unpleasant manager and I'm out. Like, do you do that? Because, and I know on the other side of the things, you don't want to blackball yourself in the industry.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. You want to be careful about it. It reminds me of the guy who, it was JetBlue or something. He jumped out
right.
of the airplane on the slide.
Right.
And, you know, just got so fed up with it. And I don't think that that was the best way to go. I mean, I think that you need to decide for yourself what is important here. Is it important for you to do this, or is it more of an ego thing? And if it's just for your ego and not about like standing up for yourself, it's just to, you know, kind of an ego trip, then it's not worth it necessarily. Because in the long run, if it is going to hurt you and hurt your career, and then you won't get, you know, a reference or a positive reference from them or for the company, then you don't want to do that. So know the difference between, is this worth it just for my like self-esteem and standing up for myself, or is this just an ego trip? And do it if it's for that second reason.
Okay. And just a question on that, Hallie, like, let's say, you know, because I think a lot of people, especially in the moment, might not think of the big picture, and they might take the route where, you know, they're going to tell this guy where to take it, or this woman where to take
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
But if they are, you know, intelligent enough to know, you know what, this is going to hurt my career, I'm going to just pack my briefcase and I'm out. But they have all that pent up aggression, because I feel like, you know, as a human being, you are meant to stand up for yourself if things have been unjust. And if you know, with all your heart that you've been treated badly and, you know, this didn't go well and stuff, when you leave that place, but you've been smart enough to, you know, not cause a train wreck behind yourself, what do you do with those emotions, Hallie? Because it just feels like, you know, yes, you've probably been the bigger person and the smarter person to make sure your career will continue. But it just seems like you're leaving with a lot of, whether it's aggression or disappointment or all those feelings that go along with that. How do you get out of that maybe ball of negativity?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one is you can say something to your boss before you leave, as long as you always do it professionally. And try to do it constructively, you know. So like you said, don't cause a ruckus, that kind of thing. But you can say something if you feel it will be that important to you. Just say it in the right way and be smart in the way that you say it. And then afterwards, I mean, there's lots of, it's the same way as you would get out any other frustration or aggression, whether it's, you know, working out, like to get that out, really processing it for yourself, and allowing yourself to feel that way instead of just stuffing it down. Don't take it out on other people, obviously. But some people will journal and write about it. Some people will go, like, take a long bike ride or, you know, something like that. Some way to kind of process those emotions and get them out. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but you don't want to hold on to it and take it to your next job for sure. Talking it out with people is a great way to do it, too. Just talking it out and kind of processing through it in your own head, getting it out there in some way will help you move past it and be at peace with it at some point.
And just a question, you know, for this person, you know, who is moving on, you know, to the next step. Again, I know it's hard no matter what situation you are in life to sort of turn the pointer back at yourself. But if this person, you know, has had a bad experience, and again, you know, there's all intents and purposes, it was, you know, or if we put it the example that it was the boss that was the main sort of core of the problem. But for yourself as an employee going to your next job, do you need to sort of look at yourself a little bit before you start that new job and be like, you know what, there are certain things that even though my former manager was unbearable, did do all these things, I made certain errors along the way as well about maybe protecting myself or, you know, standing up to myself or for myself to a certain degree. I need to look at certain things to make sure this pattern doesn't continue.
Yes, exactly. So I believe that this is better done after you're already gone, when you have a little bit more objectivity about it. And again, you can talk with someone about this too to help you with that. But to draw a line, it's almost like two columns on the page and say, what was my boss and what was me? And what are those things that I need to look at so that I don't take them to my next job? Because just jumping into another job isn't going to help those things. You're just going to take them with you. So you do. You need to do that self-reflection to clarify and identify what are the things I need to work on so I don't keep bringing them with me to every single job I get.
Okay. Hallie, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That certified career coach, Hallie Crawford. Again, make sure to check her out, www.halliecrawford.com.
Capture your need for sound.
As we soon head into the spring season in many parts of the world, this is the time of year that we need to refresh and renew how we're going to look for the next several months. To help us get some good ideas about what we should be looking at for spring 2011 is former Tristan in America assistant manager and current fashion consultant, Parmal Gahunia. Parmal, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I am good. And I'm so happy to have you back on the show. You joined us back in the fall as we were sort of, you know, heading into that, you know, autumn and winter season. And now that we're heading into spring season, I have to ask you a few things because, you know, spring for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other people, is, you know, it means sort of new and refreshed. And so I have to ask you, you know, what are we looking for as we head into this spring 2011 with regards to new and refreshing?
Well, Kelly, that's exactly the right approach to have to spring, because spring really is a great season. It's very different from all the other seasons in the sense that it's kind of when everyone comes out of hibernation. And we want to put our best foot forward and start new. And the best way to do that is kind of just to step out of the box a little bit, that your comfort zone, and you know, change things up from what you've been doing in the winter seasons, which is, you know, the big bulky sweaters and keeping warm. And you kind of just want to lighten and freshen things up a little bit, put a little color into the wardrobe, you know, maybe show a little bit of skin. But spring is really just the season where, you know, fashion designers kind of think about travel a lot more, and they want to enchant the senses of the consumer and kind of make them feel like they're not where they are anymore and take them away to like a foreign land where, you know, everything is light and fun. And really with our Canadian winters, which are notorious, you know, for bringing in the winter blues, spring is a great season where people want to think warm thoughts and they can incorporate that into their spring wardrobe.
I have to ask you then with regards to this whole, you know, travel idea for North American fashion, you know, whether that's Canada, the U.S., Mexico, are we being sort of influenced by other countries, you know, or do we still have a bit of that homegrown sense? Like, I know you said travel, so do we really look abroad, or do we sort of amalgamate, you know, abroad and homegrown?
Well, I think we like to think that we don't think abroad, but actually the fashion designers and gurus of the world are working in mysterious ways that we don't even know it. And are, you know, the spring 2011 season is actually inspired heavily by such countries as India, Africa, Peru, and Turkey, just to name a few. And so we might not even know it, but the colors and the textures and the fabrics that we're bringing into our daily lives are heavily influenced by those countries. And so, you know, now that I might mention it, when you go into a store, you might notice that a certain pattern or, you know, a type of necklace might look more African or, you know, Indian inspired than what you might wear normally in the winter, which is, you know, maybe a turtleneck and some UGG boots. But I mean, it's just this kind of way to spice up your life.
When it comes to men, it's funny because I, you know, you always hear like men are the conquerors and they're out exploring and all this kind of stuff. You know, that's the, you know, a characteristic that we've always had of our lovely men in our lives. But when it comes to their clothing, I find there are the last people who want to try new things. And so what do you say to men, you know, as we go into spring 2011, you know, do they shed and really try to step outside the box and think differently?
Well, I think they're usually the last ones that are getting into spring, only because men don't think of fashion in a very different way than women. They think more, okay, well, it's getting warm and I need to wear a t-shirt now, or it's getting, my feet are getting warm, so let me find some sandals. And it's a very kind of strategic way. And so when they go shopping, men are very, their imaginations in fashion, it's very limited. They need to be shown what might look good on them. And so for men, you know, they need tips more than women. Women are much more creative. So for men this season, in spring, I always like to, whenever I would have a client, is kind of see what they initially have in their wardrobe and then basically assess what they need in their wardrobe. Usually that means some kind of color. I always like to say that every person needs a signature item for every season. Basically, it's that item that when they go into the office or they walk into a room, they immediately are noticed. And so that could be anything from a jacket to a great shoe to any number of items. Honestly, it's just about it being personalized to the person's personality. So for men this season, I mean, I really think that it's important for them to make a great change, and not a huge change, just to change little things in their wardrobe. And sometimes that's just, you know, even instead of wearing a boring dress shirt, maybe try a thin fitted sweater in a great color. And some great colors this season for men are any shade of blue, really. Emerald green and a deep purple. And usually purple is a color that men don't ever want to gear towards, but it's one that really makes their complexion look great. So if you want to get noticed by a lovely lady in the office, or that you've been, you know, cruising for a little while, let's try a really great color and you'll stand out from the ordinary.
And does that also translate to jeans, Parmel? Like, do they stick with that tried and true blue? Or because I've seen some of the younger guys, and I guess these are ones who are a bit more daring, wearing jeans that are kind of colored this season. Am I right with this?
Oh my God, this season is all about, especially for men, it's about basically the fact that there are no rules and there are no bad ideas and anything goes. But I mean, like you said, you've seen some crazy colored jeans this season. That doesn't really mean that purple or red pair of jeans is going to look good on every single guy, because we know that's not true. but it means that, you know, there's such a wide variety of blues and grays and blacks that we can go into for denim. And basically it just means that there isn't one color or one shade that's really in style. Everything is in style. It's based on the person. And so this time, more than ever, there's ripped jeans are, you know, the kind of worn out look is really in. Skinny jeans are really great on a guy, but I mean, it's not every man's going to be able to wear a skinny jean. So let's just keep that in mind. But then again, boot cut, and there are so many other cuts of jeans that are equally as as nice and can be pulled off, you know, in the office or for going out. You know,
so they do have a lot of choice.
There's a huge choice. Spring is really like I said, for men, there's such a wide variety this year. Even for the jackets and for shoes, that's like my main thing for men is that you know, oftentimes we find that men don't really accessorize very well. But the major accessory for men is their shoes. And I think you know this as well as I do. Is that usually guys have one or two pair of shoes in their wardrobe, one for going out and one that's a sneaker or a runner. And so basically, you know, if they can find a happy medium, which is pretty much all the different colors and shades of shoes that there are out there, that's a great way to kind of funkify your wardrobe.
Yeah, because I've seen like guys where they might just be wearing, you know, a regular jeans or whatever you want to call it, like a, you know, like a dark blue or whatever, and then if they've just tried to be a little bit different with the sneaker they're wearing, it kind of just makes the whole outfit pop.
Totally. I mean, women, it's so much easier. We have so many different accessories we can play around with, but men don't really have that. And the shoe is such a big, important accessory. And so if there's one focus I can even say for men this spring is find a really cool shoe that doesn't have to be expensive. It's just a little bit different that suits your style and that's comfortable. And I promise you, you will find yourself wearing it more than a dress shoe and more than a sneaker. Because you'll be putting it with everything, you know, from semi-casual to going out and clubbing to, you know, even I've seen guys do a really great sneaker with a nice three-piece suit. I mean,
yeah, like, you know what's funny when you brought that up is I remember, I think the first time I really saw it was a few years ago with Justin Timberlake in concert when
yeah,
I saw him
totally.
With
mm-hmm.
the suit and the sneakers. And I just think that's such a cool look. Joining us on the show today is Parmal Gahunia, a fashion consultant based here in Montreal. Now, Parmal, if we head over to the feminine side of things, what are women looking at in terms of being new and daring for spring 2011?
So basically this spring for women, there's a wide range of floral tones. And some great pinks, browns, corals, bluebird blue, and some aqua greens going on, in addition to lavender purple and beeswax orange. So you could tell that these are colors that haven't come forward in spring for a little while, so they're more fun to play around with because we haven't been seeing them in a little while. And in addition to the great colors, we have amazing prints too this year, and that can spice up any wardrobe for any woman, because springtime and prints are just hand in hand. It expresses the personality in an individual. So spring's a great time also to try great fabrics, different fabrics. In winter, we're really tired of always wearing our wools and our heavy fabrics. So try a flowy, more feminine fabric, and you'll really appreciate it. But my major item for spring this year is the skirt. So every spring we see one item that kind of stands out more than all the others, and this year it's the skirt. So, I mean, there's many different types. I know that some women don't always feel comfortable wearing a skirt, but it's a great way, you know, to show a little bit of skin and to get out of the whole, you know, pant suit idea and kind of put a little bit more fun into the wardrobe.
I know that for certain women, depending on what type of career they have, you know, they do have to be a bit more professional at work. But what do you say to a woman who, you know, again, might want to shed some of the conservative action going on? Do they do that with like a print? Is it like in the shirt where they can sort of let loose, or is it in the actual, you know, pants or skirt?
I think pants don't really change that much for women. I mean, they do, and they, in the sense that, you know, in the summer we have capris or we have Bermudas, But, I mean, the actual pant type doesn't really change that much for women. One style that looks good on you will always pretty much look good on you. But, I mean, a great way to kind of bring the fun in is through the shirts that you wear, because shirts are usually more are inexpensive compared to pants. So you can, you know, get a whole bunch of cheap shirts that are fun, and not kind of burst your budget.
Do you also, does that also apply to shoes for women too? Because I feel like that is another way to make things sort of pop, just like we talked about with the guys. But I know that shoes for women can be expensive.
Shoes for women are very expensive. I'm a big advocate of shopping online and finding deals that way. Because, I mean, even if you like Aldo or, maybe Little Burgundy or Browns, I mean, yes, they're great, but they're also very expensive when you go into the stores. So I like to kind of shop online, because you'll find that there's more. If you know your size, I mean, this is a great way to shop. And even if you don't know your size, I mean, and you kind of know, I might be a 7 or a 7.5, there's always ways. They have great refund policies. You can go into the store and get a refund, but you'll find better deals. There's always a clearance or a sales section on every website. And really, for shoes and purses and accessories, online shopping is really great, because you'll find that the prices are sometimes, 3 to 4 times cheaper than in an actual store.
That much?
Yeah. I mean, I personally think that if you, let's say right now, you're shopping online, it's sometimes 70% to 60% off right now. And honestly, it is that much of a difference.
I'm so glad you brought this up with the online shopping, because I don't think I've ever bought anything online with regards to clothing except for, like a team sweatshirt for my brother. You know what I mean? Like, because and I'm sure there's lots of women out there like me that are afraid to do that. Because here's my thing. I know that some people out there are fine with the whole, even going into a store physically and not trying on something, bringing it home to try it on, realizing it doesn't fit, and then going back. But like, my time is way too valuable for me to be going back and forth. And I guess that's how I view the online thing, where if I'm off, then I got to send it back, So, but I guess if you are sort of, like you said, careful about what you're doing, it can actually work out for you on the first shot, and you're saving money.
I 100% agree with you, and I actually didn't start online shopping until, maybe two or three years ago, only for the sole reason that the deals are a little bit better, and not for everything. I mean, clothing, it's kind of hard, unless, like you said, you don't want to go back and have to return it. You just feel like that's spending double the time on one thing. I totally agree with you, but I mean, honestly, it's if you know your size, and it's trial and error again, it's a really great way to kind of save time. And I've actually never had to return anything that I've bought online.
Wow, that's amazing. And you brought up before about accessories, and like you said, now you can do it online, or if you are out in person doing it. What are the sort of hot accessories for this spring, Parmal? Because again, I think that's one of those intangibles where it can really change your look.
Totally. And for women that, I always find that I like to spend less and get more. So if you're a woman that, is looking for a kind of a cheaper way to get into spring and not have to, spend a lot of money on it, I would suggest my two favorite accessories, which are also very hot all the time in the spring, are belts and scarves. I'm notorious for always wearing a belt or a scarf, because honestly, the belt is by far the greatest invention, in my opinion, for women's accessories. And there's two reasons for that. They're very simple. And I know a large number of women that would probably say I'm crazy to even say this, but belts usually hide a large number of sins, or can really kind of accessorize and create an illusion of a silhouette for a woman that doesn't have one. And I'll give you two really good examples, Kel. It's that if you have, let's say you're a skinny girl, and you have kind of that silhouette that doesn't have a waist at all. If you wear a thick belt and you wear it right under your bust, between your hips, so kind of towards the middle of your belly, you're creating the illusion of a waist. And everybody needs that hourglass kind of shape. So when you do that, it really takes you apart from the rest of the crowd. I mean, right away you have a focal point to look at, and it makes it just it elongates the silhouette. And even for the shortest person, it really does make them look tall. So if you don't believe me, the best thing is to maybe go into a store and try it yourself. You don't have to buy the belt, but, you know, maybe just give it a shot. And my second thing is, if you're on the opposite end, which is, you know, you have a little bit of a tummy or you want to hide the junk that sits outside of your trunk, I think you should try a skinnier belt and pair it with those tunics that we see everywhere for women. And so the tunic is made longer, but it doesn't mean you have to wear it just like that. Find a little skinny belt, wear it at the waist, and kind of, you know, have the flowy top kind of just fall over the belt a little bit, so that it hides and it doesn't cling to your stomach. So that way it hides kind of anything you don't want seen, and it creates the illusion of this flowy, nice fabric, and nobody really knows what's underneath, you know?
And Parmel, if people have, you know, questions for you, because you're just amazing as far as I'm concerned, and I think a lot of people, even my, you know, myself included, would be one of them, where sometimes I get a little bit overwhelmed with trying to figure out, you know, where I should be going as we go through sort of each season. How can people reach you?
So I have an email address for any questions that people may have, or if they want to set up an appointment and they need a consultation. The email is styleitmtl@gmail.com, and you can send me any questions there. And I'd be happy to get back to you or help you out.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Parmel, for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Kel.
That's Parmel Gahunia, former Tristan and America assistant manager and current fashion consultant based here in Montreal.
Bring on the
Remix.
Remix. We'll be right back.
Bruno Mars with Grenade, the Curris remix on The Kelly Alexander Show. You know what? Thanks so much for hanging out. We've had a wonderful time, I think, on the show this week. A big shout out to our guest, Denise Warner, our entertainment correspondent from popeater.com, Parmal Gahunia, our fashion consultant, and also certified career coach, Hallie Crawford. And you know what? I have to say, it was very amazing to chat with Hallie. She has some wonderful advice when it comes to taking care of your career and making sure you protect it and advance. So make sure to check her out. Very simple, www.halliecrawford.com. So again, that does it for us on the show. Want to leave you with a positive quote of the week, and this one comes from Gary Ryan Blair. Quote, "Do more than is required. The distance between someone who achieves their goals consistently and those who spend their lives and careers merely following is the extra mile." End quote. Have a wonderful week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.